We also need to hire ahead because we didn't have capacity. Sometimes we start with the qualitative. The growth of the business is capped by my ability to grow. We're building a trap of our own making. Give ourselves a bit more grace.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Breakout CEO Podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Holman. I'm an attorney with Intellectual Strategies, and I work with CEOs, and I see some awesome and sometimes crazy stuff that happens behind the scenes with businesses I work with. And since I can't share their stories, I like to bring successful and scaling CEOs onto the show and talk about some of their breakout moments. And today we have a pleasure to have David Kim with us. David, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I'm really excited to have this conversation and just talk about some breakthroughs and perhaps hear some of yours as well.
Oh, yeah. That'd be a turn of events here. My mind might be preoccupied now when I'm trying to ask you questions, but you know, we'll go wherever it flows. So I'm excited to talk to you because you're building an organic growth company, right? By building an organic growth company, you're actually, I feel like you're kind of on the edge of things. You know, you're out there, you're dealing with AI as much as anybody is, I imagine. You're trying to help companies deal with AI as much as anybody in their industry is. And so you're seeing, I would guess, correct me if I'm wrong, as much or more disruption and movement and sometimes guessing and, you know, forecasting as any industry out there. Is that accurate to say that?
I would say so. I mean, it's in order for disruption to be happening, I would think that there needs to be some stability to then disrupt. Oh, I feel like the disruption is just so consistent that it's just normal now.
The disruption is the consistency.
Yeah, yeah. So you're correct. It's interesting over the last couple of years, we've been faced with kind of two really big shifts in our industry that causes a lot of challenges for us, but it makes it very fun. Where in the past, we focused on SEO, ChatGPT got launched, and now the question is, how do we appear in ChatGPT or Claude or Gemini?
Yeah.
So it becomes another marketing channel that we need to learn how to work in. And we've run a lot of experiments. We figured out a lot of things, at least to the best of our knowledge, that are working for our clients, which is exciting. But the other challenge we were faced with is, how does our delivery model change as we integrate AI into how we deliver? Mm. And how do we meet client expectations related to that, where they're saying, I can do this with Claude. Why can't you do it quicker with Claude? So we need to do some transformation internally about how are we using AI thoughtfully and making sure that we continue to maintain a high bar for what we deliver to clients. So it's fun. I mean, it is a lot of challenges and it raises a lot of uncertainty. And one reaction could be fear of change and resisting. But the way that my co-founders and I have approached ambiguity is to treat it as opportunity. And there, to me, that is the only way to approach that if you want to build a business. Otherwise, you get stuck in the past and you get left behind.
Well, I'm sure we'll dig into some of that. I'm going to reframe it as turbulence, right? The continual.
Yeah.
I have this image come to mind as you're talking about this. You know, this airliner flying through the sky. You know, I don't know fluid dynamics well enough. My background's electrical engineering, not mechanical or something else, aeronautical or whatever. But I had this picture of this plane flying through the sky, and at the nose of the plane, like your business is essentially positioned at the nose of the plane. You're in constant turbulence, breaking through, you know, the static air, and allowing this plane to fly. But you're having to absorb and deal with and react to everything happening at the nose of the plane, while maybe some other people, your clients or whoever, are dealing with positioned in other areas where the turbulence isn't quite so constant. So,
yeah, I mean, I'd even empathize with our clients and say they're probably going through as much turbulence as we are, but perhaps in different ways, right? They get certain pressure from investors or leadership to evolve and do more because AI can let you do anything now. So there's definitely turbulence on all ends. And it's helpful when we can have that conversation with clients and say, hey, we're also figuring this out with you. We're on your team here.
Yeah, I love that. And so your company, Omniscient Digital, helps with organic growth with, you know, SaaS and tech companies, right? You're helping them essentially figure out how to reach their audience. I want to get into that a little bit, and you know, might as well let the audience know what you do, how you do it, and maybe if they want to get in touch with you, how to do that too. But But before we get into Omniscient Digital and where you're at today, tell the audience a little bit about your background. Like, what led up to, you know, starting Omniscient Digital, leading it, and trying to help SaaS companies with their organic growth? Has it always been organic growth for you, or what have been some of those mileposts along the way?
Yeah, it's always been organic growth, and it started because funny, you shared that you had an electrical engineering background. I have a chemistry background, so I'm curious how we both.
Oh, you're smarter than me, then, that's for sure.
I wasn't the best chemist, which is why I'm not doing it anymore. But where we landed was I ended up at HubSpot, which I think a lot of people may know at this point. It's a CRM, marketing automation, sales automation platform. And I got to learn a lot, and I saw the company grow from 500 to 5,000 people, and we decided to move on because it was getting a little too big for me at this stage. But during that time, I learned a lot. I got to work on very interesting projects, and it always revolved around some form of organic growth, meaning we weren't just running paid ads. Like, there was a team focused on that. They're great. That wasn't my specialty. It would be through SEO, through content, through partnerships. And once I got more exposure to other companies and people at other companies, I realized that a lot of companies needed help with that as well. So while I was at HubSpot, I was fortunate that they really encouraged people to be entrepreneurial, whether internal inside the company or having a side hustle. Mm-hmm. So I always had a side hustle. I was doing some form of consulting, and I made some friends who were my coworkers at the time, Alex and Allie, who are now my co-founders. But it turned out at the time that they were doing something similar. They were also doing their side hustles. And at some point we thought, why don't we just team up to do this and be able to work with maybe larger projects with larger brands. And that's how it came to be. We ended up forming back in 2019, and we were fortunate that just through word of mouth and knowledge of our work portfolio and coworkers who moved on to other companies, that our reputation was enough to kind of kickstart getting the first couple of clients. And that's how it all started.
Well, I have to ask, because I started my law firm around the 2018, 2019 time period. It was a kind of a fuzzy transition, so I'm not exactly sure when it was. But but when I did that, you know, about a year later, we of course hit COVID, and I distinctly remember. I don't know if as a service based company you had the same experience. You know, we had an office somewhere and a small team, but we'd set up to be, you know, completely distributed if we needed to be. And COVID hit, and I remember thinking to myself, man, I'm grateful that our clients are kind of around the country, and you know, we can continue working for them. We have this office, nobody goes in there anymore, and we eventually got rid of it. But I felt a little bit guilty in a way, and I don't know if that's the right word, but because of the fact that people would say, hey, how's your business? You know, I'm just struggling and this and that. And I would be able, and I would say, well, you know, candidly, it's not really that different for us because we're set up in a way that we are distributed. We work for clients across the country. We don't rely on being in the office. And so it was less of a disruption to our law firm. And I wonder if, because you're kind of in that professional services, B2B, whatever you want to call it, did you have the same experience through COVID, or did it hit you differently?
Just a quick note about our guests. I host the Breakout CEO podcast to share behind the scenes insights from scaling businesses. As an attorney, I see the real challenges leaders face long before success becomes public. But client stories have to stay confidential. So we invite guest CEOs to share their own moments of struggle and success. I'm so grateful to our guests and my team at Intellectual Strategies for making this show possible. Now, let's get back to the show.
Before I answer that, I'm also curious. I mean, just because COVID happened, I imagine people still needed legal counsel, right? So,
yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I would think business probably got better. Maybe people needed more legal counsel.
I mean, there are cycles where the economy worsens and litigation increases. We haven't traditionally been a litigation firm until our. You know, we do a fractional model where our clients hire us to be kind of a legal team for them on a fractional basis.
Yeah.
And if you start to be integrated with your clients, as those clients grow, eventually they get sued or they want to sue somebody. So we've brought litigation on. So we haven't traditionally, I don't think at that point in time, we really had much litigation, but certainly, you know, economic factors will kind of trend with or in correlation with the some of the legal services. But people were building companies the whole time. People were inventing things. Yeah. People were branding. So we did have a steady stream, and so that didn't die off because of COVID
yeah.
Factors.
Yeah, I would think, you know, so many businesses got formed during COVID. I would imagine they need help with the startup paperwork and all that stuff. So
yes.
Yeah, good to hear that it didn't impact you as much. Didn't really impact us either. We were fully remote. What was interesting was at the time when the three of us were at HubSpot, there wasn't really a remote culture. And Alex and Ali were two of the handful of people that were remote at the company, funny enough. And they were based in Texas and Chicago at the time. So by nature of that, yeah, we started as a fully remote company. So no rent or anything that we needed to deal with. But an interesting thing happened during COVID. Probably remember, interest rates were near zero. The tech industry was at very frothy valuations and raising a lot of money.
Yeah.
I was at a startup that raised a lot of money and I got to see that firsthand. It didn't make any sense. So during that time, it was great for business, to be honest.
Yeah.
A lot of startups had a lot of money. They wanted to spend it on marketing growth and they didn't know how to do what we were doing. So we actually benefited quite a bit. And I think our positioning in the market was very helpful as well, because we were focused on business metrics that were harder to move, but we had case studies to back it up. Whereas I did hear from some competitors that we're friendly with that they were having trouble. So I think we were fortunate in our positioning, the timing, and how we set up the business.
I love that. Yeah. Well, that's curious. I appreciate you sharing that. What's been the growth trajectory for your business? As I look on your website and I see your team, I'm like, you got a pretty solid group of people there. How's that?
Yeah.
How's it grown since 2019 to where it is today?
Yeah. Well, when we started in 2019, me and my co-founders were part-time. So we had taken full-time jobs at other companies. We were part-time. It was 2021 that we jumped in full-time. And once that happened, we did the triple top line revenue on a small base, of course. I recall tripling again the next year. And we started going into a more reasonable growth where it was more like 40%. So growth has gone extremely well.
Yeah.
And the way I view it right now is we're at another inflection point where, because of all the change, I won't say it's an all or nothing type of situation for how we're growing, but we are going a bit more aggressive with, there's a change in the market. There's a lot of uncertainty. We have a pretty strong position in the market with a handful of competitors that we admire, and we know who we're up against. So let's invest here and let's grow. And one of the big decisions we made that I guess you could consider a bit of a breakthrough was changing the way that we hired, because we realized that the way we hired was actually negatively impacting our growth and stunting it. And I'm happy to go into more detail there, but that was probably the biggest unlock.
What do you mean by that? How big was your team at this point when you were, you know, hiring, you know, we'll call it the original way of hiring. How big was your team and how did it grow then?
I think we did it up until about 15 to 20 people. And we were kind of at a plateau for a year or two. And the way we did it in the past was, and it worked. So I won't say don't do this, but it stunted our growth after a certain point. But we were very mindful of not wanting to hire ahead of client demand. Mm-hmm. So we didn't want to hire to have extra capacity just to be ready for clients, because you don't know if those clients or contracts will actually go through. Because, you know, in sales, deals fall through. That happens.
Right, right.
So what we did was we had this philosophy of, we will only hire team members once we have enough sales pipeline and the team is stretched to a certain rate that justifies bringing on a new hire, because then there's work to then already be absorbed. And that was great. We were able to manage margins. We set the expectation with the team of like, here's why we hire this way. We don't want to overhire because we don't want to have to lay people off. And we had team members who went through that and they appreciated that. We would not want to do that. We also, because we were bootstrapped, we also took the approach of hiring scrappy people who maybe didn't have as much experience, and we would train them up. And that worked up to a certain point. But the breakthrough we had was, hey, if we really want to grow this thing, we need to hire people who have seen the game before. We need to hire people who are more experienced, and we also need to hire ahead, because believe it was last year, 2025, we had a month and a half where we had to say we cannot take any more clients because we didn't have capacity. We didn't have the recruiting pipeline built out. So that resulted in revenue growth that wasn't where we wanted it to be.
Yeah.
And it was a self-imposed restriction is the way I view it. So what we've since been doing is we have a capacity planning framework where we can actually map our sales activity and pipeline, what we expect to close, how many clients we expect to have, how much capacity we need to hire, that we can now confidently say in the next 30, 60, 90 days, we're going to need this much capacity. Therefore, we need to hire. So we're actually hiring ahead of demand now, but knowing that we have the pipeline to back it up. But also we're hiring people who have done it before. So we're fortunately in a position where we grew, we became very profitable, and we can afford to hire more experienced people who actually are telling us what to do rather than us feeling like we need to be the ones to problem solve everything.
Was it that moment in 2025 when you had to start turning away some clients because of lack of capacity that was that the first indicator that things weren't working quite right with the team or with your hiring practices? Or were there other signals before that where you're like, this something feels like it's off, or something feels broken here?
Yeah, there were definitely signals before that I can't point to now, but that was the big in our face moment of this isn't working. So we need to make some pretty big changes in how we operate. And what came after that was, wait, are we hiring the right people?
So it wasn't just timing. It wasn't just, are we hiring at the right time? But if we're going to change the timing of when we hire, should we also reconsider the qualifications or the experience level?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Became a lot.
Yeah.
I have to ask, is that possibly a function of maybe the logical scientific background that you have? I know when I start opening up a puzzle and I'm like, well, I see a thread here, and I start pulling that thread and I'm like, wait a second, that thread attaches to three other threads. And before I know it, I'm like trying to recalibrate an entire system instead of just like snip that one thread off. I don't know if you do that too.
I definitely do that. I still do that every now and then, but I look at that thread and I ask, do I need to fix all the upstream things right now? Or can I start with this thing, put out that fire, and then address that later? Usually I can address it later, but it did open up that can of worms of, okay, we've agreed we need to hire a different profile of employee for individual contributors. We also agreed, my co-founders and I, that we need to hire a director level of leadership because we were in the weeds managing. We're also kind of in some of the client work, and we're also trying to do the strategy piece, which, as you can imagine, that doesn't work out and it's not very sustainable. And there was actually a point where we had a pretty candid conversation of, I think we're building a trap of our own making. Like, this is not what I wanted to build a business to do. We were actually pretty stressed out and not very happy.
You didn't want to be sales, fulfillment, collections, leadership, finance. You're probably feeling, I mean, that's a stage that a lot of companies go through, 15 to 20 people. In fact, I worked at an engineering company. I was an intern in college, and I sat down with the president. First, you know, we worked closely together. He was a very nice guy. And we maybe had 60 or 80 engineers at the time. But I remember him giving me a lesson one time. He's like, Jeff, it was really easy to grow this firm to about, I think his number was 15 people. Really easy. Mm-hmm. Like the work's there. And it was really easy to grow from 25 to where we are today. But 15 to 25 about killed us. That was the hardest stage of the entire business. Is that kind of what you're describing?
That's funny because that's almost exactly about where we have been for about 2 years, where I've heard similar anecdotes, but it's more around revenue size of, hey, 0 to 1 million is pretty easy. 1 to 5 is very tough. Once you're past 5 million, smooth sailing, at least until you get to, I don't know, 10 or 15 or something. And so we're kind of in that phase right now. And I think we're going to break out of it by the end of the year. But that is, I can't say that I enjoy doing all those functions all at the same time. I can do them if I have to, but it's not sustainable. And it results in a very unhappy, grumpy, stressed out David.
Yeah. Well, and I'm curious too, because these decisions, when you have a couple co-founders, were the conversations, and were you guys typically pretty aligned in the conversations, or was there, you know, a little bit of politicking or maybe some debating that had to happen? Not to expose any of the, you know, the intricacies of your partnership, but you know, I'm curious if there's anything there that that you saw that might be helpful to other people who are also in partnerships and probably going through the same types of conversations with their partners.
Yeah, fortunately, we're usually mostly aligned. There are definitely points where on specific nuances or details where we might disagree, but we're typically aligned on the in broad strokes of the direction we want to go and the type of business we want to build. Yes, it helps a lot. I feel very fortunate. The times where we do disagree, we kind of just debate it out. Sometimes it does get a little bit combative, but we know that at the end of the day, we're on the same team. We're not We're not trying to discredit anyone's intelligence. We're not trying to split off into a separate company or break up the partnership or anything like that. So it helps to know that we're coming from a place of, hey, we want to all succeed together. It might also help that we each have gone through therapy and have our own coaches to help us work through, like, hey, is it me? Am I the one that needs to be a better communicator? But I think we could probably do better. Like, there are areas where we could communicate more if we had the time and space to do so and we weren't trying to run the business day to day. But I think we have a good space to work out those disagreements quite well.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic. And like any, I mean, look, you mentioned lifting before, you know, doing your deadlifts or whatever, that like lifting weights, you know, to build muscle, you have to have tension for growth, and it's not always the most pleasant tension. And, you know, sometimes it's, I think there are also, I had one CEO I worked with for a while, and he would, I think he abused us a little bit, maybe took it too far sometimes, but he was always like, Jeff, you got to have tension. You know, there's tension between this department and this department, or this objective and this objective. It's just always there. And, you know, he I think he tried to leverage that for certain things sometimes, but it stuck with me that, I mean, there is going to be tension. You don't get away from that. My wife and I work together. We don't always agree about what to do.
How does that work?
It works pretty well, actually, for us. Yeah. But,
Are you able to compartmentalize?
Well, she's very patient with some of the things that I think we should do. So,
okay.
But she's also very good at implementing the things that should be implemented. So, I know it doesn't work for everybody. It works for us pretty well. But No, I'm glad you shared that about your partnership. And it's interesting that you're open also about the therapy part of it, like knowing. Like I've worked with lots and lots of attorneys. I've worked with lots of executives over the years, and I've had some where I've said, "Hey, listen, if I don't know if you have somebody to talk to, I know leading at the top is a lot lonelier than most people realize. If you need somebody, I'm here. I'm a pretty good confidant because you know legal counsel. But you know, I've wondered a lot of times if some of the people that were in leadership roles had that outside support, whether that's therapy or some other thing. So, you know, not to comment on anything deeper than that, I think it's fantastic that the three of you, that all three of you have some outside support that you can go to and, you know, lean on whenever you need to.
Yeah. I won't harp on it too much, but I strongly recommend it to every CEO. I mean, there's definitely the archetype where they just have a particular way that their brain works and they can just muscle through it all. I, for better or worse, I'm not like that. And I don't think I want to do it that way.
Yeah.
But what I've learned about business from other people I've spoken to, and I'm curious how you work through this yourself, but I view the growth of the business and the growth of the team is capped by my ability to grow and get out of my own way and get out of other people's way and work through whatever shit I have that makes me feel like I need to behave a certain way that causes me to get in the team's way or my own way. And if I don't work through that, then I'm going to cap growth for the business. I'm going to cap other people's professional development. I'm going to cap the level of ownership they feel like they can have. and I'm going to limit my own growth. So
yeah,
it feels beneficial across all aspects of life. And I mean, it'll negatively impact my personal relationships too, if I'm not working through that stuff.
Yeah. Right?
So I highly recommend it to people.
Yeah. No. So you kind of asked about what I do. So I have two thoughts that I'd share on that. And that the first one is maybe more practical. There's a book I recently read. It was referred to me by another attorney who helps a lot of clients establish partnerships and, you know, new businesses. And he said, "Hey, Jeff, you got to read the partnership charter." I forget the author's name right now, but it was interesting because as I read that, so much of that book, I mean, there was the mechanics of making sure you all agree, making sure there's candor among the group and openness and all of that. But it felt very like a therapeutic type of book, right? Like if you can do everything mechanically that he's saying, you've probably just worked through all most, if not all of the therapy type issues that might come up in your partnership too. Come to find out, the guy, the author that wrote it, and I wish I had his name with me right now.
It's David Gage. I just looked it up.
David Gage. That's right. David Gage, his history is as a therapist. And I'm like, oh, wow. Makes sense why this. So you got a therapist who moved into consulting and ended up writing, you know, establishing a business, helping people resolve partnership disputes and writing a book on how to, you know, called the Partnership Charter, on how to establish partnerships. I'm like, that actually feels so natural. I wouldn't have guessed it before reading the book, but having read it, I'm like, partnerships require therapy in some manner.
Yes.
Whether that's a marriage or business partnership or other, you know, intimate partnership, like you need therapy. And if you can't have candor and talk openly with the people around you, I've seen partnerships, I've seen businesses where those things just fall apart, and it's not because they're not good people, not smart, not skilled, but if you don't have the, you know, if you can't be open with the people around you, or if you can't see past your own, you know, you name it, ego, fear, ulterior motives, if you can't see past those and actually talk openly about the bottom line, I mean, it's kind of no wonder that a lot of partnerships don't really work well, because you know, even by looking at them from the outside sometimes, that people just aren't open about what their real issues are. So,
yeah, it's interesting. I made a comment earlier where you said that you work with your wife, and I said, oh, how does that work? Just out of like sarcasm, because I'm sure you have a great partnership. But one thing I've learned is, you know, when me and my now wife Lisa, we're getting married, we're like, hey, let's read these books, figure out how to be a better partnership together. So we read books like Seven Principles for Making a Marriage Work. Mm-hmm. We read some books on prenups. And as I read those books, I thought, wait a minute, these are very relevant to how I should work with my business partners. And at the same time, I'd be reading these business and leadership books. And I'm like, wait a minute, these same things can probably apply to my relationship.
Yeah.
So it's all related somehow, which I know some people might hear that and not get both of those perspectives, might be like, how does that work? But in odd ways, building a business, learning to be a better leader has taught me how to be a better partner in life.
Yeah.
Being in a relationship with Lisa has taught me how to be a better business partner as well. So, yeah.
I love that. Well, I'm not going to necessarily recommend that you ask Lisa to read the partnership charter, because I think it'll be too dry. But you've probably already covered a lot of it with the other stuff you've been doing. Congratulations on your recent wedding, also, by the way. So
thank you.
Well, let's jump back into Omniscient Digital and your stuff there.
A bit of a tangent there, huh?
I mean, it's the stuff we get to talk about. You know, it's not the stuff that you would talk about if your employees are all sitting in the room, which is why I think it's so important we get we can tangent here without a problem. More recently, as you've made the hiring changes, you know, the way that you hire, who you hire, the timing of your hiring, what are you seeing either in your business or in the SaaS companies that you're working with? What are you or they doing to kind of stabilize or try to manage the turbulence of this environment that we're in, especially that you're in and helping your clients with?
Yeah, I'd say there are two things. One is making sure that they have a narrative to tell to leadership of what they're doing. And part of that, we help them with, at least with the growth story and what we're investing in and how we're going to help with business growth. That part feels pretty straightforward, right? If, like, as CEOs, we want to hear from our team, like, what are you going to do about this? Like, what's the plan?
Yeah.
What's the story? Give me something I can believe to know that this is going to be on the right track, knowing all the challenges that we're having. The second piece is going to sound at this point a bit cliche, but leaning very deeply into AI. A lot of our clients are going through layoffs.
Yeah.
We got a text message from a client today saying, hey, me and my team just got impacted by layoffs. So we're going to have to cancel the meeting that we had scheduled for later today.
Yeah.
But the companies that are going through that and the people who see that coming or have gone through it but continue to be with the company are figuring out, how do I use AI to do all the things that now fall into my shoulders? Because I don't have the team anymore. So
right.
The only way that I can do the work of 10 people, or at least try to, is if I find a way to be thoughtfully using AI. And we're helping some clients with that, where we're saying, well, let's walk through what was being done. Let's walk through what's expected of you, that your management and leadership expect of you, and prioritize what actually needs to be done. We're not just going to try to do the work of 10 people, but maybe there was 50% of that work that absolutely needs to be done. That's critical to the success, both working together and for your success, separate from what you're doing with us. And we'll figure out, well, what are the workflows you need to build? What's the tooling that needs to be done? What's the reporting that needs to be done? How can we essentially, in some cases, break out of our scope of our agreement to support you? And a lot of that has to do with helping to build AI systems for them so that they feel like that work is still getting done.
Yeah. I was just going to ask, and I think you just answered it, if this is actually expanding the scope of the work that you do. And it sounds like it is. It sounds like you guys are, and I think you have to be, kind of flexible to that, right? Because we're working on the frontier right now.
Yeah, it is really interesting because I'll be candid, it's where I wanted the business to go, where I saw the business going, but now it's more of a forcing function of, hey, that thing we thought we would do in a year, clients are asking for it now.
Yeah.
I was just in New York visiting some clients and at some conferences, and one of them was saying, hey, I need my CEO to be on LinkedIn more because he has a big audience and that's where all our potential prospects are, but he doesn't have time. But he's such a great speaker. He's doing all these talks and all this stuff. And I explained to her this whole workflow I had of every day I have Claude go through all my calls, identify which ones are sales calls, pull out the most common questions, turn those into LinkedIn posts and blog posts, automatically upload those to my scheduling tool and all that. And she said, I want that. Like, how do you build that for us? And I was just sharing something, thinking, yeah, he can just build this. But she said, can you build it for us? So just very basic things like that feel obvious to us because we're scrappy, we're bootstrapped. We have to figure these things out. By sharing them with clients, they say, how do you do that? I can probably figure it out, but I don't have time. Can you do it for us? And it's forcing us to question, well, is this a new service? How do we position ourselves now if we also do essentially AI systems build outs? That's a big question we're working through right now.
Yeah. And it's impacting every industry. I mean, I'm in law, we talked earlier, maybe in the icebreaker, the same way that you are. We're starting to say, how do we integrate AI to help provide better services to our clients? But also, how do we respond when clients come to us and say, oh, hey, I've already got most of this done. I just, I just need you to sign off on this that it's done right. I did it all on AI last night. Here's a 30-page document. Just, it shouldn't take more than half an hour to look at it, type of thing. You run into that too, I'm sure, where people are like, hey, we started to build this. Can you finish it? Or can you build off of this? Like, how do you, in fact, we ought to pause right here. We don't have too much time left because I know you got a call coming up, but I want the audience to know that I think David's going to give like the answer that we've all been looking for the last 24 months right here. Is that right? No, just teasing. How do you respond to, you know, the requests from clients to try to leverage AI on their behalf at lower budgets than what you would normally charge?
There are two ways that we approach it. I have actually had prospects come to me and say, here's what we built with Claude. Here's what we're doing. Here are the results we're seeing. What can you do? And I'll actually tell them, you should just keep doing that.
It's pretty good for what they've spent, probably.
Yeah, that's pretty good for what you've done. And until you get to a point where it's at a scale where you don't know what to do next, or it's hit a plateau, you don't know how to grow it, or it's just too big for you to maintain, bring us in then. But at this stage, you're doing what I would advise you to do with such a small budget. For the clients who we already have and they try to make a case of doing it for a lower budget, to be intellectually honest, there is a case where, yeah, maybe we can do it at a lower budget now that we can use these AI tools. The other piece that we speak to on our calls with clients is, you're not paying us for the output. You're paying us for the outcome. And yes, there's some formula for how we charge for the work that goes into the output. But at the end of the day, if you're paying us $10,000 a month and we get you $1 million contract, does it matter if you're paying us $8,000 a month or $10,000 a month? Probably not, right? Because that contract's going to more than pay for the work with us. And that happens very frequently because we work with B2B clients. Maybe it's not $1 million contract, but it'll be a couple $100,000 contract, biggest contract that they've landed because of the work that we did. So that helps ease a lot of the conversation because they can say, oh yeah, we have gotten those leads. You're right.
Yeah.
Am I trying to negotiate this when we're getting that ROI from the work together?
And your first example there reminds me of what a tennis coach once said to me. I'm like, hey, I've got this racket. I've been playing with it for a couple of years. Like, I see these fancier ones coming out. Like when should I get a new racket?
And he
should
goes, I upgrade?
And he just goes, Jeff, is that one working for you? I'm like, well, yeah, I don't have any problems with it. I just saw the fancier ones and the new models are coming out. He's like, well, then keep the one you got. You know, trade up when you notice that this one's not working anymore. So that seemed way too simple, but you know, I hang on to rackets a lot longer now, I guess, because of it.
I feel like the answer to a lot of our questions tend to be simpler than we'd like to accept. I'm curious what it's like for your world, but for us, sometimes clients come to us with very complex questions, expecting a very complex solution based on what they see on social media and everything that people are pitching them and things like that. And I'll say, actually, you don't need to worry about 80% of that stuff.
Yeah.
You can do it later, but what you need to focus on is the 20% right now. And we can do all that other stuff later, but those things are marginally beneficial to you. It's hard for them to hear that because you want to hear that you were going to do this very complex thing, but really it's, how are we going to help you focus on the right thing?
Yeah, we see that in two ways. We see people coming saying, a lot of our inventor types really want to build patent portfolios and build extensive trademark portfolios so they can, you know, buy all the letterhead or put, you know, what stickers on their wall. And I'm just like, hey, start simple. Legal isn't generating revenue for you probably. So let's get you the basics. Then you can generate revenue. And then we can have conversations. If you're still really interested in a portfolio, we can talk about that later. As you know, scale the legal as your revenue scales. That's one way we
see it. Build the business before we try to get legal to protect.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And then the other way we see it is that when people come to us with really complex proposals, it's usually because they're violating some type of compliance or regulatory issues. It's like, this is not meant to be this complex. The reason you're doing it is because you're trying to avoid what the rules actually say. So it's kind of a red flag a lot of times, the complexity.
Kind of, I don't know, does that mean you want to take it on or you don't want to touch it?
That means I want to be really careful about what I tell them before I let them sign up. So. Well, David, I know we're coming to a close here. I really appreciate the insights that you shared, and I'm excited to see where Omniscient Digital grows with the team and everything. For those CEOs that are out there scaling a business, maybe they're SaaS CEOs saying, oh, I need to get a hold of David to, you know, have his team work on some stuff for me. Maybe there are other CEOs just saying, man, I probably should get a therapist or whatever. I like to take away something. What would be your kind of number one insight that you would want to share with somebody that would be, you know, like you were a year ago, say you were in the trenches, and if you could tell yourself one thing 1 year ago that you know today, what would that be?
Yeah, I don't have an immediate thing, but I do have one thing that might be helpful. And yeah. Each year I have a mantra for myself that's just kind of a thing I repeat to myself as a reminder of how to get through challenging times. Some years it was just the word breathe. Some years it was something like a faith, not fear, when things mm-hmm. were really challenging. This year is grace and space. And I think as CEOs, we tend to focus on the next thing, or what's the thing I need to do, or what's the fire, and all these things that we need to juggle, which is all valid. I think we could give ourselves a bit more grace mm-hmm. and kind of let ourselves know that we'll get to those things. We don't need to beat ourselves up now. We can do a little bit of it, but move on and give ourselves that space to process what's happening and be able to look at the whole field and figure out where we actually need to focus versus getting tossed and turned because you're stuck in the middle of everything. You don't have space to zoom out and actually prioritize what you need to do and where to actually spend your time and energy. And that mantra has gotten me through a lot this year already.
Yeah.
And hopefully it's kind of what folks need to hear as well.
I love that. That's very grounding advice. So having something to kind of bring your focus back to throughout the year, because it is chaotic running a business and growing a business like you're doing. So
it's fun.
Well, yeah, it is fun too at times, isn't it? Thank you so much, David, for coming on the show. It's really been a pleasure hearing even a little bit of a slice about your business and what you're doing and the lessons that you've learned and the breakthroughs that you've had. So thanks for coming and sharing that with us.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciated the conversation.
Yeah, it's been fun. And to our audience who listened to this week's episode of The Breakout CEO, thanks again for joining us.
Be sure to follow or subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. And if you enjoy the show, a rating or a review goes a long way. Our mission is to promote the stories of breakout CEOs in scaling SaaS, e-commerce, and tech companies to equip peer CEOs with valuable perspectives and confidence. Thanks again for joining us on this episode of The Breakout CEO. I'm Jeff Holman, and I'll see you next time.